All right, thank you. I'll do the roll call as usual, but let me know if anybody that is currently blocked out is able to jump in for the record. I will call our September 7th, 2022 meeting to order for the Clean Water Commission. Starting with roll call, Brendan Addis, present. Matt Jones.
Present.
Michelle Gertz.
Present.
Roger. Still
He's
on the
in
phone.
the waiting room. He's in the waiting room.
Okay, hopefully we'll get him on board soon. Jeff?
Present.
Thank you. Marie? I see Marie's present. I didn't hear on the audio. I can see you there, but I can't hear you yet. Sorry on that. I'll proceed with the roll call. We'll check that in a second here. Sandra?
Present.
Josh? Thank you. And Bob?
Present.
All right. Thank you all for making it this evening. First order of business is approving the minutes from July 6th. I know Jeff was able to submit some edits earlier. Thank you for doing that. If anybody else has any comments or needs a second to review them, please go ahead and take a look, and then we'll approve the minutes from July. I'll ask real quick if anybody is still reviewing them before I call for a motion to approve. Not hearing any objections. Any motion to approve minutes as is?
So moved.
Any second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, approved. Thank you. Next item is public comment. And I believe, is it Peter that's with us this evening? Thank you, Peter. Peter, I know that it's stated that there's 3 minutes for the public comment, but I would like to give you more time. I've seen what you've submitted, the effort you've put into this report, and I think this is some good information. So please, you know, with our evening in mind, but I'd like to give you more than the 3 minutes to talk on this. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you, and please let us know what you've brought.
Okay, great. Appreciate that. My name is Peter Brackey. I'm a resident of Vancouver. I've been living here since 2016. I'm retired. My background is in the computer industry, and I'm also a degree geologist and geographer. For the last 6 years, I've been tracking and documenting environmental issues along Burnt Bridge Creek and also communicating these issues to the city of Vancouver. Okay, so we all know Burnt Bridge Creek has quite a history, starting off with it. The lawsuit that was settled out of court for water pollution. When that money was paid off, the time frame now was about 2015. City paid off what, 500,000, or the county paid out 500,000 a year on that 3.5 million. About the time that money was paid off, end of 2015, 2016, we started seeing problems along Burnt Bridge Creek with environmental destruction and pollution. And that problem has just gone on and escalated over the last 5 to 6 years. We have lost the use of Burnt Bridge Creek as a recreational area. You can ride your bike along there, but families cannot safely enjoy that as a recreation area, go off trail, enjoy being with nature. And this is quite a large area. It's not unfathomable, the length of it. People walk it, and you know, it's a finite area. Okay. All this land is owned by pretty much by the city of Vancouver, and it's all within the critical care area. And the critical care area, well, that was all put into place by the Growth Management Act. And along with that came our Shoreline Management Act, our critical care area ordinances, et cetera, okay? And Burntbridge Creek is a perfect example of wetlands, frequently flooded areas, geologically hazards, mainly in the area of steep slopes. It's also a fish and wildlife habitat conservation area. And there's also many areas along that where it's intersected with the critical water recharge areas. And these are what we would refer to as wellhead protection areas. But for this discussion, we're just going to talk about surface water. And Burntbridge Creek, basically, it's an open flowing stormwater sewer that's permitted. And what's happened is this whole area has been destroyed environmentally by the use of people sustaining life and living on that land. The results of living on that land have brought fires and pollution, okay? Now, from a qualitative standpoint, I cannot tell you the effects it's having on Lake Vancouver, the effects of milfoil growth, the amount of fecal bacteria in Lake Vancouver. But from a qualitative point, there's no one that's going to deny this shouldn't be going on. It can't be helping Lake Vancouver. And, you know, we've lost use of the lake this year. We lost the use of the rowing event. You know, so we're seeing problems grow. Like I said, I can't say directly how much it affects it. You know, we have the flushing channel clearing out Lake Vancouver, but toilet bowls flushing, you even got to clean those out every now and then. So there's an accumulation of microplastics, all sorts of pollution that have been funneled in to Lake Vancouver that are there contributing to problems today or are going to present themselves in the future. And that's just evident that what has been going on over the last 6 years should have not been happening, okay? If we look at it from a grander point of view, way back when this started, the city did not do a SEPA study to see what is the effect. Well, our camping, you know, we're going to open up camping. We're going to make camping laws. They didn't do a SEPA study and identify the land that was affected. They did not pay any attention to their to the shoreline master plan or their critical areas. For some reason, those areas were just opened up, you know, public lands that they considered it. And over the last 6 years, we've seen continual repeat destruction. You know, the problems arise. You know, we have these large camps that are automobile chop shops or bicycle chop shops. They have fires. The fire, you know, if they can get to them, they put them out. But also then you have all the runoff from the rains washing all the greases and chemicals into the stream and eventually working their way into Lake Vancouver. I've had very little success dealing with the city. When I ask to talk to environmental specialists, all I get is a lawyer. I've had several articles in the Columbian over the last several years, you know, trying to get increased public awareness to this problem. There's also a three-part series that Clark County Today did, and that was specifically on the area around Arnold Park, which is just to the east of Leverage Park. That's close to my home and one of the areas I'm most passionate about trying to save. So, you know, at this point, you know, I've laid this document out. You can see all the areas that are required to be protected in critical areas and the damages that have occurred in these areas. Most of my photos all have GPS position location on them, and I can put them all into a Google map and view them that way. I have a degree, like I said, in computers. I use the program and play a lot with them. So I've looked at this data from every way and presented it to various people in the city. And, you know, this document now represents, you know, my growth in knowledge and understanding of the laws and rules and regulations. And at this point, all I can do is basically summarize it and find somebody that's, you know, that can help, you know, protect the environment and protect our waterways and, you know, restore our recreational area back to the people and, you know, prevent any problems heading towards Lake Vancouver. So this document, it's all full of hyperlinks. You can click on it to see additional pictures. I've spoke to the Department of Ecology on certain aspects of it. Basically, I'm talking to as many people as I can to get group involvement to figure out what we can do to bring this into control. That's pretty much, I appreciate you giving me this extended time to address you.
Thank you, Peter, for taking the time to do it. It's a concern I share. I've spent a lot of time working in Portland over the last few years with stormwater and seen very similar impacts. And unfortunately, similar amounts of attention being taken to it or resources available to put any attention to it. I know that our role a lot is tied more to the county than the city, you know, and also, you know, in the position of doing what we can as advocates versus being able to take action. So we appreciate you sharing the information that you have with us. By the way, I wanted to encourage everybody, if they haven't already, to look at the document that Alice forwarded that Peter did put together. I wanted to ask quickly, with folks you did talk to, you said you kind of just got directed to legal representatives with the city. You tried to speak with Department of Ecology. Did you get any responses to why there was a limit of action or what seems to be a lack of attention on it?
No, I just can't, you know, who's the one to take the action? You know, it has to be me in another lawsuit, you know? Who, you know, the EPA can kind of frown and point their fingers. I've got some other things I'm working on, but, you know, I've talked to the same people that ran the lawsuit for the, you know, like that end up suing the county. And at this point, they're not interested in taking up the lawsuit again. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've spent so much time over the last 6 years on this that, you know, at this point, I've got to pass it on because I'm at the limits as to what I can do to influence the city.
Yeah. Yeah, Michelle.
Well, I have a question. First of all, I think your document is quite compelling. And I thank you for providing all the documentation and pulling it into one place. It's interesting to me that along with all of the other codes that appear to be being violated, there is a wetland mitigation site in the mix. And, you know, I believe that there are some requirements for mitigation sites that have to be in place for them to be affected and accepted by ecology as mitigation for a particular activity. And maybe Brent can comment on this a little bit more, but given his background and role, but it doesn't appear to me that mitigation site is providing the wetland services that it was expected to provide. And that's actually a violation not only of local, state, but also federal laws. So there's a group that areas that need to make decision and weigh in on decisions before maybe and as effective as or more effective than a lawsuit situation.
Thank you. Yeah. Basically, I just, you know, I went to both of the shoreline management review programs that we had last fall. I actually attended Vancouver's and Clark County's and presented information similar to what I presented you, but more dedicated to the shoreline destruction, destruction of a floodplain control structure that's essentially a bridge that is built to control high water flow has been damaged, and that's right next to the mitigation site. So I brought all that to the stormwater program because the critical care area ordinance is within the stormwater management umbrella and program. And my goal was to try to get a thing in there and say, hey, no camping in critical areas. But they totally blew me out and shut me out of the whole situation because what I was talking about wasn't relevant to them, which was beyond me. But I did go to the Clark County one, but since Clark County has so little, there's just a little touch of shoreline that Clark County has right at St. James and 500 that's involved with this, you know, but the same information was presented and submitted to both. So like I said, I've gone to the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board and talked to them. They are the people where all the dollars went to and are holding all the money and investments, right? Okay. So the $3 million we paid out went to the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board. And I did talk to them and, you know, said, hey, well, the city submitted this project to you, but they didn't disclose the certain information. They weren't too happy about that. So I've talked with that group to make them aware of the problems and whatever, but it, you know, it doesn't make sense. $3.5 million went to the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board. And here we are now with a crisis along Burnt Bridge Creek to the same area, which is now owned by the city of Vancouver instead of Clark County. And, you know, I can't use that money. I mean, the only way I could get that money was, you know, get my neighborhood and we would install a park bench. You know, I can't, that's all I could petition for as an individual. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm just at a loss for where to go for help and how to get help.
Yeah, Jeff.
Just a few comments. One, we must live pretty close together. I'm in West Minnehaha, and I go through Arnold Park frequently. I've been down there with the city picking up a lot of litter. I recognize some of your pictures exactly. Uh-huh. I've seen them all. Two comments. One, I did a little digging into this afternoon because I was curious who's doing what since the initial study was done. There is an updated study that was published in the fall of 2020. Looks like the Department of Ecology has done a bit more research and tried to segment where the water quality problems are coming from along Burnt Bridge Creek. And then from that, it looks like there's something called the Burnt Bridge Creek Partnership for Clean Water. You've heard of that?
Yeah.
I don't know if you were aware. Okay.
Yeah, and the city has not submitted any of my information I've been given to them for 6 years into that program. Okay. I've contacted that program, yes. And I've sent them the same document I sent you folks. And that's how bad it is with the city that they went into that Burnt Bridge Creek Partnership program. Mm-hmm. And they said they talked about it, but there's no written documentation. They have a slew of documentation. And the environmental firm they had do the study, I had even contacted that firm earlier and sent them information and say, hey, you guys, you got to do boots on the ground. You know, all that study, I don't know where or how it was done, but there was no boots on the ground.
Yeah, I see the list of documents too, and it looks like they had a few meetings in 2021, and then I don't see any activity in 2022.
Yeah, that seems to be in limbo right now, and I've contacted the program manager for that and have been in contact with them and will continue to be in contact with them. But that's just how blatant. The city of Vancouver thinks it's a litter pickup, is what they tell me.
For the sake...
Go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead. Finish, Jeff. What were you saying?
Oh, just regarding the litter and the homeless situation. I don't know who you've been reporting to. I know the city's pretty well aware of some of the established camps. But when I see something new or piles of trash off on side trails, generally what I've been doing is reporting it to the HART team. Mm-hmm. And if it's something new, they will go in with the police and have a talk with the people and kind of assess their situation, see if there's any resources they need. And if it's a camp that has been vacated, they will then work with the talking trash group to go in there and clean up. And I pointed out several areas where there have been abandoned camps right along the water. So, you know, who knows what's been leaching in and so on. But they've been fairly responsive, so... I would encourage you, if you see something like that, to report it in.
Yeah, we're intimate friends.
But I'm glad to hear that.
We're on a first name basis. Except we, you know, basically they think I'm just a homeless head. You know, my problem's with the homeless. Yep. You know, but it's just like, you know, you don't understand the environment, folks. You don't understand the laws. You don't understand the Growth Management Act. You don't understand the Shoreline Management Act. You don't understand the critical care areas. I mean, and they don't. They're police, you know. And the city, there's the city council doesn't understand. You know, I don't know. Like I said, it's just I've worked it from every slant. I've gone through the police department. I've gone through the fire department. They did finally, and plus, okay, because we got the Bonneville power lines going through that whole area there, and we've had so many fires under power lines. And that's why I've been on their case for years on fires, and they finally have banned no camping in their no fire zone, if you're aware of that. And there was an article in the Columbia, and I was on the front page going, hey, yeah, great, it's the happiest day of my life, you know. I'm trying to save the environment. It has nothing to do with the homeless. I mean, plus they're not homeless. I mean, they're there over 30 days. I mean, you got to register to be a resident in Washington. And that land, by definition, is non-buildable, non-livable land. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's just every common sense thing I would ever throw at the city. It just bounced his back. That's all I can say.
Well, Peter, I wish I could leave you with something to give you some more satisfaction than just continuing to try to make noise on the issue and be heard on it. But I do appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and putting this document together. It is an issue as a community member that I share with you. I don't think this is really an encouraging statement, and you probably already know it, but it's definitely evident to me that the bureaucratic structure of how cities and counties are managed is such that problems become diffuse into departments, and it's very hard to apply what seems like logical steps on the ground, particularly with environmental issues where everything is interconnected. So I know it can be really difficult when you bring something to a group's attention and the nature of the issue is, oh, that's not our department. We don't deal with that. And, that can be very discouraging. So I'm with you on hoping for better solutions to that in the future. And thank you again for your time this evening.
All right. Appreciate it very much. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you. For our next item on the agenda is the topic of a new chair, which is really just me sharing a little bit of about myself and where I'm at in life.
Hey, Brendan, just a quick thing. There were no other public comments. So
thank you.
Just Mr. Brocky.
Thank you. And thank you for arranging that with him today and forwarding that document for us. So the topic of a chair, I am just going to start by giving you all a little bit of input of where I'm at. I've been, Alice knows better than I do how long I've been on the commission and how long I've been doing the chair gig, but it's been a little while. And I currently have been, I left my position with the conservation district earlier this year. I have been busy starting my own company, which is exciting and fun and stressful and busy. It's going well, but it requires a lot of time. On top of that, I play single dad a good portion of the week. My daughter started middle school the other week and is on track, so I got done picking her up this evening, raced home to the dinner that I'd prepped before going to get her, got it cooked, set her up, and jumped in here. I'm a little busy right now for putting the attention that a chair needs to this. I'm happy doing it when I'm here. I really enjoyed it, but it's not just the activity of chair. It really, to the full extent, is the activity of, you know, making all the meetings as much as we have them spaced out. I've talked with some of the other senior members of the board or of the commission, and not to out anybody, but we got a lot of folks that I think have had a long tenure here and are going to be moving on to other things soon. At the same time, I'm seeing a really talented new group that has a lot of energy and a lot of ideas. And Roger, you're incredibly engaged. I've seen Sandra's organization, Jeff's eye for detail, Bob's history and connections. I mean, we have a group of new people that I also think are engaged and would be great for stepping into the role. My take two on our commission entirely right now is that the veteran group has done a lot over the last few years of our tenure of trying to lay some groundwork for organization. And there's going to be some new blood coming in and some new energy. And organizations like this are really shaped by the people that are involved and engaged. And I think some of the veteran members like myself are kind of phasing out on that. And so personally, I'm saying, hey, I'm looking for somebody else to step into the role, and I might be stepping away from the commission entirely soon or to a much more limited capacity if I am involved. But I also want to do so in encouraging everybody, not just the veteran members, to look at stepping into that role of leadership and engagement on it and taking it by the reins going forward. So I've already talked with some people who I know are not interested in taking the chair position. So I open this up to the broader group conversation. I don't want to leave us in a bad position, so I will do what I can to stick around as long as needed, but I'm asking everybody else to tell me, go forth. I guess to make it a forward question, is anyone interested in taking on the chair position soon? See, then I just get stuck by default.
Well, Brandon, this is Sandra. It would only be for two more meetings.
Two more meetings, yeah, Sandra.
As much as I would love to help you out, unfortunately, I've just kicked off a massive project at work. And even just making these meetings sometimes as spaced out as they are is a bit of a challenge. And I've really appreciated, Michelle and Jeff's patience as I've had to shift even our working group meetings around at short notice due to that. And so unfortunately, I would not be able to step up at this time.
I don't want to call on everybody individually. I figure if anybody was interested, they would raise their hand. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to like run away from this meeting and be done entirely. I'll ask everybody to consider thinking about it some more. I know it's on our agenda tonight to talk about our recruiting process and engaging with the community for getting new members. And I would really like us to make that a priority. I think it's really important for us not only to have new leadership, but a lot of new engaged individuals for this organization's longevity. Yeah, Michelle.
I'd ask, Brendan, are there some activities in the role of chair that it would help you to parcel out. It might give people a little more familiarity with what the chair does without them taking on the entire role of chair, and help with succession planning, board development, and growth into the future.
I mean, I feel that the largest part of the chair role is just chairing the meetings. That's really where the most of the groundwork comes on. So if you're not in attendance, then you're really having to put it on your vice chair to jump in on that one. Outside of that, it's, you know, I try to make sure as chair to make sure I'm really briefed on everything, you know, looking at Peter's presentation before it's right in front of me. I know previously it was very easy to come in as a commissioner and like I could review documents for the first time while we're talking about them. I think the chair is much more in the position of trying to engage in that. But I think the other thing too is that in the position of trying to drive the organization to be actively doing stuff, we need more energy in that. And I think part of it's been the pandemic. I think part of it's just been where the county has been in a lot of turnover recently and, you know, us trying to find what we're doing and where we're going with that. And I personally just don't have the mental energy right now focused on anything to drive the team. In that respect, the chair doesn't have to be the one driving that. And I'm fine, you know, really letting the groups do that and kind of stepping back. But I guess I'll say that, like, I feel the impetus to try to put that energy into the group a little bit more and have that leadership. So, you know, that can be coming from other people. You don't have to have the title of chair to do that, but. But. Not to take up too much of our time, I'll move on to the next topic. Y'all know where I'm at and where I'm feeling on that. So, folks, think about it. And on top of thinking about it for yourself, think about other people you know, for recruitment to try to get in here. So I think that would be good for us. So next up, Clean Water Division updates, interim manager update from Brent.
Good evening. I don't have a whole lot, just because I'm still getting oriented and, but just a couple of things. Right now I'm viewing my primary role as an interim, division manager, to essentially act more as a steward, you know, keeping things on track that are in motion, and, you know, keeping things moving forward that need to move forward. One of the things I'm focused on right now is, you know, making sure that staffing is where it needs to be. We do have a vacant, administrative position, and that's been a challenge just in terms of resources. So I'm working on getting that filled. And then, you know, the Public Works is recruiting a new director right now. So I anticipate I'll be, in the, you know, working towards orienting a new director to the program and what it does, getting prepared for that. And then one of the big things we're working on right now is getting the capital facilities plan updated for the next 6-year period. Jeff Schnabel's doing the heavy lifting on that, but we'll be taking that to council at the end of the year. So working on that right now. That's what I've got.
Thank you, Brent. I also open this up too. I don't know if you're on board for the rest of the meeting this evening or if you have to step away.
Well, I'll be around.
You'll be around. All right. Thank you. Next up, education and outreach, Eric.
Well, hello, and thanks for having me again. It's been a while. For those of you who I haven't met yet, I'm Eric Lambert, a clean water outreach specialist. It's been so long that I'm not sure if I've said that I'm in a new team in Public Works called the Community Engagement and Inclusion Team, which is managed by the Public Works PIO, the Public Information Officer. Just wanted to consolidate, I believe, some of the communication folks within Public Works. I'm still doing all the same work to support our education and outreach requirements under the MPDS permit. And so I'll give you some updates about some of the things we've been working on. And I'll start with our pet waste behavior change program, which is what we're doing to fulfill our current permit requirements. So basically, we piloted this program on Cougar Creek last year. We were doing some poop counts to see how much of a problem is this in along the creek. And we were averaging about 45 piles per month picking up along the creek. We installed a kiosk. We did outreach, some tabling at the trailhead, following community-based social marketing practices. We asked people to take the Canets for Clean Water pledge to scoop it, bag it, and trash it everywhere, and keep dogs on leash in sensitive areas and help to spread that message. And when they took the pledge, we asked if we could take a photo of them with a little Polaroid camera that we had. We'd stick it up on this kiosk, which has messages about or has information about why it's important to pick up. And really just saying, you know, we pledge to pick up, join us, essentially. Research shows that neighbors are more likely to do the right thing when they know their other neighbors are doing the right thing. And that's kind of the idea behind this campaign. This year, when we've been doing the poop counts, and continuing to do outreach, we've been picking up on average, 7 piles of poop per month. So, can it all directly be attributed to the outreach campaign? Maybe. But truthfully, yeah, we don't really know 100%. But what we do know is that there's been an improvement, and that's the good news. We also did this with another trail this year with the full implementation of the program, and we chose Daybreak Trail along the East Fork Lewis River. It's similar in length to the Cougar Creek Trail. And truth be told, it's similar in the poop counts that we've been conducting this year as well. We're averaging 43 piles per month. We're also doing the same tabling and install the kiosk at the trailhead there, collecting photos and pledges in the same way. Have not noticed a decrease yet, but we'll continue to monitor that and see how that goes. We've also done a mailer this year. I don't have the poop count. I don't have all the poop counts to report data from some other trails that are in Washougal and Camas and Battleground. Later this year, or definitely early next year, we'll have a full report we'll be able to share with you on this campaign. The other thing that we've been doing is we did our second student video contest, Students for Clean Water video contest. This year, we had good participation. I think we had about 65 entries of pretty good representation across the county. And we secured some prize donations from some private businesses. Students got $500 for first place and $100 for honorable mention. We had 5 different prize categories. And the neat thing was we actually, this was 2 weeks ago, we were able to recognize the winners at City of Camas Movies in the Park event at Crown Park. Before the movie, we were able to, you know, give a shout out and call out the winners, bring them up, not stage, but up front, give them a little award, give them doing our part, or Clean Water Starts With Me water bottle, and get a photo with them. And then we played their videos before the screening of the film Encanto, which was the actual movie for the event. So that was a great way to recognize them. We put out some information, some posts on social media about it. And then later this month, on the 26th, actually, I'll be giving a talk through the Washington Stormwater Center. They have a lunch session called Stormwater Talks, and they wanted to hear more about our student video contest, which actually was really helpful during COVID when, you know, everything kind of got shut down. And stewardship activities were hard to come by because even being outdoors at that time in the beginning of the pandemic was off limits. And so at that time, this video contest was one of the things that we counted as a stewardship project. Basically, you know, kind of a different way to think about stewardship, but essentially, you know, we're asking students to create messaging that supports clean water activities and clean water behaviors, and to share it with the public. And so that's just what they did. And so, so it was really useful in that way too. We just met to debrief with the Stormwater Partners on the video contest. We have some ideas about ways we might want to improve it next year. And if you go to stormwaterpartners.com, you can see the videos for yourself if you want to check them out. Let's see. So the Washington State Stormwater Center also received some funding from the Department of Ecology to hire a statewide education and outreach coordinator through the Stormwater Center. I'm on the hiring committee for that, so I can't, you know, talk a whole lot about the candidates or anything, but I think we will be making a decision about getting someone hired for that. It's a new position. A long time ago, well, for a while now, STORM, which is the basically the regional education and outreach partnership in the Puget Sound region, they had been kind of pooling money together and funding, or no, they'd received some grants, I believe, from Ecology to fund a coordinator to coordinate STORM. And that funding ran out, and instead Ecology shifted to wanting this position to be a statewide coordinator. So that will actually be helpful to Southwest Washington right now. As you know, as you may know, that Stormwater Partners of Southwest Washington is our regional partnership. And I pretty much do all the coordinating for that. And so it'll be nice to have someone support me in that effort, to help, with Stormwater Partners and some of the organizational activities and components of that. And also to be able to kind of share what they know about other regional partnerships in other areas, report back to us at Stormwater Partners. And, you know, that information sharing can be really valuable. And then, you might remember a few years ago, we received a grant from the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board. That is actually some of that $3 million that, that Peter had mentioned earlier. Funding, helped replace, some watershed signs, some really old watershed signs throughout Salmon Creek watershed, Washougal watershed, Burntbridge Creek, and some of the West Slope watersheds. And it was, the grant did not fund any of the signs in the East Fork or the Lewis River watersheds. But I've mapped out all of those locations. I've ordered the signs. I think they'll be delivered next Monday. And so, our crews will start installing the signs, this fall and winter. So, if you live up in that area, you should start to see some of the signs that you see, in the southern part of the county, replacing some of the old watershed signs up there. Also, let's see, we, through the Clean Rivers Coalition, we have launched our Follow the Water website. It's still undergoing some of the, still undergoing some looks and themes, but, it's off to a good start. You can also find a link to that at stormwaterpartners.com. Going along with the Follow the Water website, the Follow the Water campaign, is more of a broader campaign. I think about it similar to what STORM does in the Puget Sound region. They have the Puget Sound Starts Here campaign, which is a general public awareness campaign, really trying to tie people's behaviors and make a connection to the Puget Sound and to people's behaviors and how that could impact the Puget Sound. And that's where that's really what Follow the Water is. It's connecting people to their waterways, connecting people's behaviors to their waterways, and then providing people with alternative behaviors or best practices to protect, make sure their behaviors and their actions protect water quality. And so this Follow the Water campaign is similar to that. And so you'll see a lot of stuff on there if you check it out. There's some really great videos, and really trying to be a resource to connect people to their local streams. Because of course, research also shows that people that are connected to their waterways and know about their waterways are more likely to practice stewardship. Now, we also have a behavior change campaign kind of under that umbrella called What's Your Lawn Style? And this, all of this work was done through an EPA grant. The EPA started issuing some grants about 3 or 4 years ago, in the lower Columbia under a pesticides, under a toxics reduction initiative. And so, so this What's Your Lawn Style behavior change campaign, the idea of this is, pesticide reduction, targeting, residents who maintain their lawns and really just trying to, you know, reduce the weed and feed and get folks to, practice lawn management, methods that have a better impact on water quality. And so there are a number of videos. There's 3 different videos actually that are focused on, you know, high, medium, and low maintenance. So that's the idea behind What's Your Lawn Style. We understand that not everybody is a lawn nut. Some people, think of taking care of their lawn as a chore, and for some people it's a passion. And we were trying to provide resources to minimize, stormwater pollutants no matter what type of lawn style that you have. So there's been a big push. We've been, through that grant, been able to fund some social media outreach. We've hired a contractor, Parachute Media Strategies, who's running the digital campaign, through YouTube, through Google, through Facebook. And then they've also actually, the Clean Rivers Coalition received another grant through the second round of the same EPA funding to continue the campaign and actually, take it a step further and develop some, community-based social marketing, pilot campaigns in a couple of regions. I think in Clackamas, in Eugene and maybe, Springfield or Salem, another Willamette Valley, jurisdiction is getting those behavior change, but it will also fund some more of the, digital advertising and marketing that they've been doing. So that's all been exciting. And, you know, trying to see how, you know, Stormwater Partners in Clark County kind of fits in there. We're interested in contributing to that program because, really, you know, Clark County kind of lacks, the same type of, public awareness campaign that we see up in the Puget Sound with the Puget Sound Starts Here. We have Stormwater Partners and we certainly have some of those. We definitely do what we need to do to meet compliance for public awareness messaging. But I think this campaign can be something that, is broader and just done at a level that, is just really challenging to do, you know, just for one jurisdiction. Particularly, you know, given the fact that we share a media shed with, you know, folks all the way down to Salem. And, you know, it's expensive to, you know, advertise on in mainstream media, just as a single jurisdiction with a media shed that large. And so there's a lot of things that make sense to join this campaign. And I'm looking forward to continuing, to serve on the steering committee for that Clean Rivers Coalition and being able to represent Southwest Washington's interest, in this campaign, which is primarily Oregon. And so I guess I should note that they've been kind enough to recognize that, in some ways, Southwest Washington is neither here nor there, right? We're not the Puget Sound, which is most of Western Washington, it seems like. And then, you know, we're not Oregon, which, you know, we're in a different state with a different permit and different sets of requirements. But been really appreciative of them being able to kind of embrace Southwest Washington, include Southwest Washington by name in their marketing materials. And I think it's going to be something good for us. And Stormwater Partners have really kind of bought into supporting this program and these campaigns as well. The last thing that I'll just kind of touch on, we had a Stormwater Partners meeting last week. And so one of the things that we were talking about was the next symposium, which will be sometime in mid-November. Keep your eyes peeled out. I usually include you all on the broader Stormwater Partners communications, but I'll be sending out a save the date, hopefully on Friday. And just, and also just kind of asking folks in the broader community if they have a project or something that they'd like to share at the meeting. For those of you who haven't attended the symposium, it typically follows a format of having a kind of a keynote presentation for about 45 minutes and then a number of smaller 10 or 15 minute kind of report outs about interesting projects and things that people are doing around the community so that people are aware of what's going on. There's a lot of people doing a lot of really neat things in education and outreach. So that's pretty much what that is. And we're continuing to do Don't Trip and Drive at this point. And so the Watershed Alliance has done one workshop, which is actually a series of three workshops in one day, partnering with Cascadia Tech Automotive, Cascadia Tech Institute, which is a school out in East Vancouver, and they have an auto program. And so that's where they held the first workshops. And so they'll be doing that again in the fall, and we'll see how that program moves forward as well. And that's what I have. So are there any questions? And if there are none, I have, okay, go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, just one question. I'm wondering whether it would be possible once that state person is in place to get a presentation from that person about what's going on around the rest of the state. So that we can, you know, sort of put the long list of things that you're doing and the county's doing into the context of the whole state.
Yeah, I will definitely kind of talk to them about that. It was listed as an entry level position.
Oh, okay.
And so it's going to be, they're going to be, you know, drinking from a fire hose for at least a month or two, at least. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, I'm sure that maybe they would be welcome to sit in a meeting to actually observe what the commission is doing down the line, you know, as a part of that.
Yeah. I'll definitely let them know about what you guys do and see. They've in the scope of work and the work plan, they've really allotted a lot of time for Southwest Washington, which is nice. So I'm appreciative of that. So we have a lot of opportunities to work with this new individual. And I'm looking forward to having that support. Any other questions? Cause I do have one question for this group. And it's basically just who, cause I'm going to leave after my presentation here, but who is on the team to the Chinese Creek name team?
And Matt.
Who is it?
Brendan
myself,
and Matt.
Matt and Michelle have attended the meetings on that.
Okay. Well, because I just, at some point I'd like to pick your brain a little bit about the process that you've undertaken and what you've learned.
Yeah.
So
it's further down the agenda, but I have a little bit of update on kind of like the directions for where that's going. So feel free to reach out to me and I'd be happy to talk with you on that as well. And I could set up a meeting with all of us if you'd like.
Is there any chance we could move that agenda item up so that we could do it now? So that Eric could hear?
Sure.
I'd be fine with giving that briefing on it. Yeah, Eric, so you just hear kind of the latest piece. And then if you want to talk further sometime, I'd be more than happy to kind of share how that process has gone. So we could be in touch about that. But yeah, so I'll just give the brief update on that. Thank you, Michelle. I met with a little bit more background. Like we've been having the conversations and trying to network and reach out to people, but it's been a very like organic process. And through that, you know, just kind of individuals being engaged. I ended up having a sit down meeting with Brad Richardson, who is the president of the Clark County Historical Museum, also a former classmate of mine from high school. And, so he and I got to catch up and talk about this, and he has great experience working with the community on different projects. And, the next step of what we're doing with this is, There is a grant that the I'm getting all the names wrong for groups out there, so my apologies, but the Clark County Historical Preservation Committee or Commission does an annual grant. And what Brad and I discussed was best approaches for that to kind of put some motivation behind bringing this together in an organized fashion. So we are going to be looking at reaching out to parks. I'm actually going to try to phone a friend with Justin Maynard and see if I can find who he was speaking with at parks because they had expressed some interest in this and some properties they have along that area. Parks could be a candidate potentially for the grant. Talk with them about them being a grantee. Then the historical museum working with their contacts in the community with folks who are involved in the Chinese American community in Clark County, about bringing together group, the historical museum doing a lot of the research, but then also bringing in a group to help facilitate partners in the community so that it is happening from the community. It has the voices of the community, representation from the Chinese American community in Clark County. And we're then going to kind of move forward with letting the process happen organically in the sense that what our primary objective is that there is involvement to tell the story and present the story in some interpretive presentation, whether Parks is able to do an interpretive site, whether the museum's able to do a show, whether there's talks that are put on, something that tells a story that we've put together with this research about China Ditch and Shanghai Creek. If in that process there is motivation and a good name that comes from that as candidates, then following that process where it originally started is like, hey, let's rename these creeks. I think there is a lot of caution around whitewashing it. We don't want to change the name such that history is entirely forgotten. We also want it to be supported broadly and by the community and still, you know, gives that representation and that the story is told either way. That, you know, even if the names stay the same, knowing the history is the important part. And so that's kind of where it's at right now. Brad and I gave each other homework assignments, and I'm going to be trying to reach back out to the group that Matt and Michelle and I have been talking with so far on it. And, yeah, just try to continue the momentum behind that. So it was great talking with Brad. They've got a lot of good experience over there in engaging with the community on a lot of this because a lot of it's history and community involvement. Engagement.
That's great. Thank you. I really appreciate being able to hear that part of it. I really do. That sounds like great work.
Yeah, thank you. It was motivating to still feel like, okay, this is going somewhere. Something's going to happen. But yeah, if you have other questions with it on it, feel free to reach out to me. I think you got my contact information.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you all for your time. I appreciate you listening to my update and have a great rest of your meeting.
Thanks, Eric. Have a good night. Alice, staff liaison report.
Okay. Get it over here where I can see it. Just a reminder that we are starting to compile and starting to prep for the annual report 2022. Michelle, that could be potentially something that if somebody wanted to help step up and assist in that, because that's one of the big activities that the chair takes on in helping to work with that and working with me on it. So if there is somebody that may potentially want to help with that, that would be fantastic. Take a little bit more of a lead role. With that, if you could send your monthly engagement, your community engagement and your activities, as well as any community or education little development that you do that's regarding stormwater plants or, you know, those kind of things that are related to clean water and stormwater, that would be really good. Because if we have, because it's basically month, date, it's broken out by month. And then also what the name of the event is and or title of the course, and then who presented it. And then sometimes we'll also have, you know, that where it was held. Also, please send your pictures of water activities and natural settings, obviously preferably Clark County. Sometimes we've snuck in ones from other places just because we couldn't find them. And that's been some of the really nice things. I've actually used some staff photos of family members, and also the Maynards were really great in the last couple of years in providing those with, you know, having kids and, you know, and Brendan also with the some of the fishing and things like that. So it would be really good to have more of those. Also, when we meet in October, November, I'm looking to have a group picture all together, because that's the plan, is we will be meeting in person. I've gotten most of the bugs worked out. I will know right now, I think we're still slated to be back in conference room 699, way in the back, the commissioner's conference room, way in the back. But if we have problems with the one challenge I've got to spend some time on, but I think it'll work, is doing the, 'cause we'll still be continuing to do the hybrid model where we will have this available. And I have not practiced that in that room. I know that it is available in the commissioner, the council's room, hearing room, and then also in the training room. But the Historic Preservation Society or commission meets in the council's chambers, and they have all the fancy microphones that are hooked up to the system. I have to find out whether or not that's still the case, because obviously pandemic has changed things. So those are some of the things that I'm looking forward to with that. And then also one of the things to be thinking about, and it's kind of linked to the bylaws aspects, a lot of what we give as part of our annual report is based on what is in our bylaws or in your bylaws. So it may be something that take a moment and look at that and see if that is something that you feel that we should be doing. And that if that, because some of those things I think sometimes are a little bit more, had been something that previous, it was important to previous groups, you know, 5, 10 plus years ago. So it may be something that is not something that is, the focus and the dynamics that are what's working and where this commission is focused and heading. So something to be thinking about. And so please let me know and where you're going and where you want to do with that. One of the other things that Eric and I have been working on, is, I'm planning on having him for the October 5th fall special meeting, having him come in and do the Enviroscape demonstration, because we'll all be together, and that's a really great hands-on tool. And we have a lot of new commissioners who haven't had an opportunity to see that. So I'm really looking forward to that. I also am having Elaine Placido, who's the executive director for LSEP, the Lower Columbia Estuary program. They're going to be providing some, they've provided a lot of the education outreach to hundreds of students all over the Vancouver area, and through some of the our education outreach with the City of Vancouver and the port. We have a Vancouver steering committee that meets, and we provide and do this project. And it culminates with a field trip to Lake Vancouver. Obviously, when the pandemic started, they weren't we weren't able to do that. And they actually were able to pivot really well and developed some really great dynamic hands-on and really innovative lesson plans that and some really new programming that I think you'd be really interested and excited to see. So I'm going to have them come in and talk a little bit about their program and what they're doing, and specifically about the education outreach that they use with us. I'm also thinking we have traditionally had every year or so Jeff Schnabel come in and talk about and give a quick summary in the fall about the new 6-year capital infrastructure plan. And I think that that might be something that would be really good for this group to see where we are and where we're going. And in addition to that, or we can either do it instead of or in addition, depending on what you want to do, have more time for your work groups to meet and or have a more intensive engagement round table. Because that was something that I know that at the last meeting, everybody was quite interested in having and continuing and starting that. So let me know either now or later if you have a preference in having the capital plan or the roundtable or work groups. And I mean, I don't know if we could. It'd be a really long meeting if you did all three in addition to the other two presentations, because the demonstration will probably take a good half hour, 45 minutes, just because, and it'll be the first time we meet together in person. So I have a feeling there'll be some of those kind of opportunities for new changes. So let me know if you have preferences. Please either shout them out now or email them to me, and I'll try to put together what works best. And we could even have the capital plan. I usually try not to plan a lot of stuff in the November meeting because that has a lot of work in it, but I could have Jeff meet in that one too. So do you have any? Yes, Roger. I can't hear you. You're muted. You're still muted. Oh, I can't hear you. I wonder, since originally there were two of you when you logged in, I wonder if the audio went with that one. Or if you want to type in to the chat, and I'll make sure that we keep a record of the chat. Does anybody else have any input?
You're looking at October 5th, correct?
Correct.
Don't know that I will be able to make that one. My daughter has an event that evening.
Okay.
Sorry, Roger, can't hear you still.
You might also, Roger, try to go out and then come back in, because sometimes I know that that will fix it. Let's see, now you are muted. Let me. Looks like you're muted, Roger. There you go. Nope.
I think Maria's proposed roundtable in the chat.
Okay. And if anybody else can, let me know, and I'll go from there. One of the other things that wanted to make sure that everybody knows about term expiration, Marie, Michelle, and Matt, terms expire this year. Please let us know. We need to know by September 30th in writing to Brent, and please CC me if you are planning on renewing or not for the next term. We really want to focus on getting this information out to a really diverse populations in the area. And so if there are any of the work groups or individuals who are able to jump in and help me identify contacts and contact information and organizations to be more exclusive and, or I shouldn't say exclusive, more inclusive and for our communication efforts and be more diverse in accessing the community. I would appreciate it. You don't have to say anything now whether or not you're going to be able to or want to stay on or not. And we can go from there. Obviously, the way it has worked is every, you provide notice and then we know how many positions we're recruiting for. And everybody does still apply for the next positions, that the next round of terms that come open. We go from there. Typically, we don't make them do a second, don't make you do a second interview. And then we will be looking at having somebody sit in and help with the interviews. That was also another positional duty that the chair and or vice chair has taken on to assist. Traditionally, the manager and myself and one or two commissioners, specifically, usually it's the chair and potentially the vice chair, sit in on interviews with the candidates in November. So please let me know. And part of the reason why we try to get the information of who is going to be available and not available as soon as possible is then I can get the notices out earlier because we generally have a 30-day notice of getting them out. Accepting applications. So that way we can move forward as soon as possible. Eric and I have been discussing this summer. We're hoping and working on revamping the whole clean water page, but also the commissioner web page. And we're hoping to get individual headshots, or you can supply your own. I'll probably take them in October, November, or you can send them to me if you want. It doesn't have to be a professional. It can be whatever, because what we would like to do, it was something that one of the commissioners this year actually had recommended that we add a section to the website that talks about commissioner biographies and has pictures associated with it to have that more connection with the community so that people can actually see and have that relation and have that, you know, community aspect and of, oh, that's who the commissioners are. So that's one of the aspects that we're looking forward to pursuing. So keep that in mind. If you're here, make sure you wear something nice then. And I probably will end up taking pictures both days at both meetings just in case some we have more than one, one or the other. Exciting news. The pipe trekker was approved yesterday by the county council. So this, as you know, you've heard in the past, we have something like 400 miles of pipe that we are responsible for maintaining. And a lot of it is starting to get to that aged out point where it's quite old and could be potentially deteriorating, but we don't know. We don't know what conditions they're in. And so this is a really exciting opportunity for us. And that was approved by the council. And I'm trying to remember now, Rhodes, I think, went in and they also are paying half, if I remember correctly. So that's something that will have a lot of really great opportunities out there so that we can start investigating and seeing, because, you know, when we lose a part of a pipe, last year was $500,000 to fix that section of pipe that went out. So, or maybe it's in 2020, but it's a lot of money. So if we can have preventative and we can actually get in there and do some maintenance, it'll be a lot better than when something breaks. Brent mentioned, we did just get permission to fill Saber's position, or are working on getting Saber's position filled. Justin's is hopefully going to be happening in the near future. Eva Haney, the Public Works Director, her last day was Friday. And so currently we are reporting Clean Water has Brenda is our interim manager, but we also now just directly report up to the assistant county manager on a lot of the approvals through the Workday program, things like that. Monitoring is going crazy right now, trying to get all of the samples in, and we have a staff meeting next week, and I'm really looking forward to hearing about all the things that they've been working on, because I know that they've been working on the ITI, you know, and they've been working on their bug studies, and they've been working a lot on the Lower Columbia urban streams and prepping for next year's, because the water year is coming up again in October 1st, and so they've got to get all the sites up and ready, as well as all the hydrology, and there's a lot of things that are going on, and there's been really happy to have that extra set of hands with our temp employee, the project employee that came on, and it's been helping during this really busy summer season. So that has been a huge aspect for us with that. So we, of course, are shorthanded with the admin. So there's been a lot there that we're trying to work through. We've had a lot of reports from people for stormwater and grading issues in the communities. And of course, now that last week we had a couple of good rainstorms, we had a lot more. And I expect, I think I was hearing on the news that next week, potentially fall, might be starting to happen. So once that starts to really kick in, we're definitely going to see even more. I mean, I'm getting something like, sometimes I get 15 calls and messages a day that we need to triage and get out to the various aspects of the county. So there's a lot there that's been going on, and I've been helping cover that. And then one of the other things that I just wanted to throw out there that, you know, when you're thinking about a lot of the aspects for the bylaws and also some of these things that are happening now and with the work groups, because I was working a bunch on the bylaws again today. And one of the things that really kind of jumped out at me as I was also looking at the annual report was a lot of the work groups haven't been able to develop short annual work plans of what you're going to work on exactly this year, what you're going to do and what you're going to accomplish. And so maybe potentially you may want to look at doing something of the bigger projects, or medium or moderate, or we want to work on this aspect of our goals or our things, and this is what we're going to do this year. And that may be a little bit easier than every first of the year coming up with a new, what are we going to do this year? and something new or whatever. And it's been nice that there's been new projects, and some of the projects, you know, continue on, but maybe it's more along those lines. So be thinking about that and if that's realistic. And Marie and I are going to be working on the bylaws here and in September and October. So hopefully to have that reviewed and voted on in November. So I think that is all that I've got. Anybody have any questions?
I guess just having folks follow up with you on any other requests for the October 5th meeting from everything you listed.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Marie and Roger. I know you had stuff to say. Technology prevented. thank you, Alice. Moving into working group updates. Bylaws update, which I'm guessing was going to be Marie.
Can you hear me?
I can. There we go.
Barely.
Play with my buttons here.
There you go.
Okay. Just that Alice and I are working on it, and we kind of had another version, so we should be getting that back to you.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for the update, and especially thank you for taking the time working on that. Outreach.
We have not met since the last meeting.
Okay. I know we have the bullet points for recruitment, onboarding, engagement, and the training manual, but sounds like that's still in works.
So that's why I want to maybe do the roundtable when we're all together. I think that would be more energetic to sit and brainstorm instead of doing it looking at faces on a screen that people that you've never met in person, you know, after 2 years. And we'll have the training manual, you know, to the group before the end of the year.
Great. Thank you very much.
That's all I got. Oh, next week I'm going to the Clean Water Conference in Spokane. And they always have some good sessions. And I think there's a couple on diversity. If I could pick up any pointers about recruitment, I'll be all ears.
Thank you. Good to hear. Enjoy the trip.
Thanks.
Partnerships.
I would actually, Josh just put something in the chat. I'm wondering if we can reverse our order.
Sure, that's fine. And I
address the chat.
I was gonna read this and listen. Josh, I assume you type in this because you're noting bad internet connection. So unless you want to jump in and stop me, I was gonna read this out. Everybody can see this as well, but bad internet connection. Looking forward to doing in-person meetings. I agree. The research group will meet to determine specific research priorities from scoping, from the scoping document that we did. This will likely consist of some questions for county staff and some independent research by commissioners. And from what he's mentioned there, you know, we kind of wanted to have some more engaged, questions that we're bringing forward, not just, you know, as much as we appreciate all the updates, we also want to be kind of an engaged citizen advisory board that's saying, hey, what's going on with X, Y, and Z? And also, as I mentioned earlier, since I'll be stepping back somewhat, we could use another person for the research group as well. So another thing for folks to consider if anybody would like to jump onto the research team, consider that. All right, looping back to you, Michelle, for partnerships.
Okay, great. Thanks. We are going to talk more about the diversity piece. So the partnerships group has lined out three points, of which the diversity inclusion piece is one of them. But we'll table that till our later discussion as a group. The other two pieces that Jeff identified in the last meeting are partnering with other, actually internally with Clark County agencies on the entire clean water life cycle. And we've talked as a commission about this before, looking at from the land use planning at the largest scale, so at the master planning and through to permitting and the development cycle before that leads up to the monitoring, how the clean water mission can be better protected. So it seems to me there are a lot of partnerships within Clark County that would be helpful here. And first of all, this may be more of an educational piece for the commission, but to look at this on the watershed scale, as we've talked about it, and through the whole life cycle, I think it would be helpful to better understand the partnerships with, for example, wetlands permitting, which, you know, Brent has been very involved with, and how those partnerships could be improved if there is a way or if needed for the best clean water outcomes. So that's one area. And the other area is in the involvement with the CIP planning. The commission was involved in the previous 3 years. We had people who had backgrounds in asset management. And as we look at the next cycle, would like to, and again, this is more of an internal partnership. So both of these pieces are recognizing that the work that Eric has been doing is really having taken the place of a lot of what partnerships did historically. This is looking at more internal partnerships around CIP planning for clean water. And I'm not sure what the timing is on that process right at the moment. So can anybody inform us?
So when you mean that, are you thinking like the 20-year plan?
20 and 6, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as the 6-year plan, we're in the process of doing the update for this year. So we're presenting that to council on October 26th and for hearing in November. So that's the timeline for this year's update.
And is there any opportunity for us to see that plan at the October meeting or at the November meeting, whichever is more convenient for you?
I don't see why not. Yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
That was what I was going to have Jeff give a presentation on.
In October.
But we were talking about having the roundtable instead. Although I think we can do two if we have him have a briefer, or we can have him give a presentation in November.
Maybe if he could give a brief one and then give a wrap with any council questions and so forth in November. Maybe that's the way we could do it, accomplish everything. And still, I mean, I don't want to short the roundtables. Would that work?
And I'll see what his availability is.
So that's where we stand right now. We're sort of a work in process. And there was a question as to whether there's a need to reorganize the working groups. And do these three categories even capture what the commission needs to be doing? You know, does there need to be a diversity inclusion, for example, working group? Are the research and outreach working groups and partnerships ones that we want to be doing? Yeah, bigger question. Yeah. Roger. Oh, can't hear you. Chat. You can put it in the chat.
Okay. Our group, since Roger can't talk. Outreach, pretty much Eric's doing that. So, you know, talking about recruitment, that's more what we're focused on this year. And then, you know, the diversity as well, because that's part of recruitment and the onboarding. So I agree that the names are probably outdated. I mean, research is always good because you always need to have someone studying something. But I don't think we need to keep these three same names.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We've been kind of talking about it almost the entire year, right? And I think that the DEI element of it is really important. I wonder if it's not us, little bit more of an environmental focus by perhaps even going so far as to call it an environmental justice working group, as an umbrella for all things related to, the stormwater effort and its relationship to DEI as a component of that. And some pieces of that make mount in our next discussion where we had some ideas, and question, out of the DEI conversation as well. So maybe there's an environmental justice element.
I second that idea of keeping the tie to environment as well.
And Roger has a comment or question in the chat that says, what about a problem-based 3-month system?
Can you give an example or an elaborate at all, Roger, in the...
Willie's type in all the ventures might be something we talked about before with being able to adapt the working groups based on, you know, what we're seeing versus letting the group drive what we're engaged in, let the issues that we see drive what the group is.
And then we'd have more fluid assignments as well.
I'm not sure if I captured your thought on that, Roger, but. I know I've talked about stepping back, but I know one thing I would like to see the organization doing more is, you know, and I think Roger does a good job of this. I, again, might be speaking for him on this, but paying attention to what is going on in the community that is affecting clean water and presenting that back to the clean water team, engaging in the conversation. I know this is kind of what Josh was mentioning for the research group, and that was kind of the intent, is that there's a little bit of, there's a heavy amount of attention giving to us getting presentations of what's happening, the educational element, and kind of the updated reports. But there's definitely been a decrease in the amount of engagement as our group, as a citizen advisory board, saying, what's happening with the following, what we're seeing here, you know, and I don't want to use the term taking to task because we want to be partners, but the, you know, just bringing attention to what's happening a lot more and asking those questions, not just getting updates all the time.
Mm-hmm. So Roger says things like individual watershed problems such as cyanobacteria, homeless, fecal coliform, et cetera. So maybe it's a reaching out and getting people more involved. Well, I think it would be easier to discuss this in person. So maybe at the next two meetings. Yeah. I think if people have ideas, I think it would be great before those meetings to line it out more in a group email to the other commissioners on the Gmail accounts, CCWC Gmail accounts, to talk more about it. And I think we'll talk more about it as we get into the diversity piece. Jeff, was there anything else you wanted to add into my slightly halting description here?
I think you covered it pretty well.
I just want to make sure.
Yep.
Just be very careful when we do the emailing back and forth. There's no discussion. Just give a presentation of this is what my ideas are, so that we don't get any OPMA issues.
Wanted to make sure Roger's last point there got heard. How do we get out of the county-based process and get to what is happening in the water of the county?
Okay, I think.
Second.
Yeah, good point. I think our discussions of the partnerships is done.
Thank you, Michelle, and the rest of the team for the work you guys have been putting into that. Next on our unfinished business or actions, we were just discussing this a bit, and if folks had more to present on this with environmental justice and DEI topic to the CWC mission. I know folks touched on a lot of what's being worked on right now. I just want to make sure I didn't brush over this or if we've covered it already.
Well, I think there was a question that came up in our group about how is the, what the commission is doing, how does it tie in to what the county's mission is in this regard? Is there a mission statement? Is there a direction? Is there a strategic plan for the entire county in this regard?
Is that a question, Alice? Anybody would have an answer that they could bring to us at a later date? Is that too amorphous?
No, actually, I think it is something. I can either have one of the other members of the CCE DIG group or somebody from the council or the county manager's office, or potentially even William. I'm on the CCEDIG, which is the Clark County Equity, Diversity Group, and Inclusion Group. And I know that is something that we had been working on. And so I'm trying to remember exactly where we are with that. I can definitely, so I think it was last spring we were actually reviewing the mission statement, strategic plan, and seeing where we were at. So I can forward that and bring that to you at the next meeting or even prior to in the packet so that you'll see it.
To that end, I'll add a question of interest I have with that for what the county is looking at as far as underserved communities. I know when we started this conversation, I ended up making a statement that sometimes what we think of when we're talking about diversity and equity, it can sometimes distract you from the reality of underserved groups and demographics in your community. And I'd be curious to know what the county has identified on that, because, you know, where areas that are being impacted, where there's not a voice bringing those impacts forward, Lots of times folks with time and resources have access to the platform to express, you know, what impacts they're experiencing, and the real issue is being silenced. So I'd be curious to know what the county has identified on that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, to tell you the truth, because that was one of, I think, the aspects that the position that was not approved with the county charter by the electorate. So I'm pretty sure there, I don't know, I'll find out, but I know that that was one of the items that they had initially envisioned for that position, was to be identifying and developing more programs within the county to better serve the populations. So I can look and see. I can try and find, see what I can find.
Roger. Yeah, sorry. Both of you. We cannot hear. lastly, any new business general discussion? Sorry, we won't be hearing from either Roger this evening. In person next time. Yeah, thank you, Alice, for working on putting that together for us. If no one has anything else, I will move to adjourn the meeting and release us for the evening. So, meeting formally adjourned. Thank you, everybody. And Alice, thank you, as always, for putting it together and hosting for us.